I'm Becca Lewis, your host for the Shift the Story podcast, where we share tips and tools for making shifts in our lives from the inside out. This podcast is the second in the series where we explore the relationship between quantum physics and spirituality and the idea of going from the within to the without. I start by asking Del to review the idea that physicists begin by exploring the without. So come with me as we continue to shift the story together.
Start from the without and then about the measurement and measuring everything outside of themselves, you know, out the universe, the world, the earth. I mean, measuring and dating and have to get it all recorded and stamped and sealed and delivered. And by the early 1900s, they felt science had pretty much done everything it needed to do. It was pretty much all finished. And like we said before, that was when it went kind of the other way. It started to delve into the inner world of what makes up matter.
So they knew all the outside stuff, they thought.
Yeah, they had all the laws and figured out this is why this works and this is what that's about. And there's, you know, all the laws of thermodynamics and blah, 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 on and on and on. You know, they developed all the laws that says you do this, you get that. And so that was a done deal. That was sealed. And so then they went within and found out that there was an atom, and the atoms were the building blocks of all matter. And the troubling part about atoms was there's so much space and there were so many things going on with an atom that they could not explain. And, of course, an atom is unseeable. And a lot of mysterious things going on that they attempt to put some kind of reasonable explanation for,
yes.
Why is this going on? And there really isn't one. That's what they found out. All the laws that they discovered for the physical world don't. It does not apply to the inner world, that small world. So there are definitely different laws. Physics ended up, as like Bryson said, physics ends up with two bodies of laws, one for the world of the very small and one for the universe at large, leading quite separate lives. That's an interesting statement right there. Leading separate lives.
So the very small universe and the very large universe live separate lives?
Yes, yeah, so which is which? So you have to, you know, it begs kind of the question of, well, which is true? Or are they both true? Can you have two truths in that? I don't think so. There can only be one truth.
So we say. So we have to kind of prove that that must be our reality.
Yes, we do.
So basically he's saying small universe, big universe. He's saying there is a material universe and a spiritual one. Is that what he's saying? Small lives, big lives?
I don't think they want to say that, but they say there's something else going on that they just don't quite understand. Well, actually, they don't understand because too many parts are things like the electrons popping from one place to another in the orbit around the nucleus in an atom, and that it just can't be so because, and yet there it is. It's in one place, and all of a sudden it shows up in another place, and it did not go in between. It did not go into that intervening space to get to that other place. So, and it's unexplainable. How did that happen? And how can, when you send protons off in different directions, 7 miles each, and you do something to one of them and it has just the opposite effect on the other one, 14 miles away, instantly? So, yeah, it's unexplainable. They don't know what's going on.
But you could spend a lifetime trying to explain it.
Yes, you can spend a lifetime trying to explain that. And they want to be able to take science and spirituality into the lab and merge them.
Which would be impossible because spirituality is not a measurable object.
Totally unmeasurable, which they're finding that out. You can't measure this thing like you could on the external stuff.
Although physics has definitely given us many signs to prove the truth that there is only spirituality.
Yes.
Standing in the point of view that there is only one mind, physics keeps proving that to those who are standing in that premise.
Mm-hmm.
to those who are saying, well, there's a separate dualistic universe, physics can't prove how it's working that way. So they actually keep proving the truth that there's only one mind by not being able to measure and explain all that goes on.
Right.
So not being able to explain how two simultaneous things 7 miles or probably millions of miles apart interact immediately, then they prove the point of the point of view that there's only one infinite mind infinitely thinking of itself in every instance, which looks like trees, houses, people, only because that's the perception that we hold.
Right.
And the shift is about shifting that perception back to the essence of what each thing is, which is qualities, which is not actually what we're talking about today, but that's where it goes back to.
Yeah. And it's like the quantum physicists are saying, some of them are saying that the mystics had it right all along, the so-called mystics and the shamans had it right all along. That, you know, it's that inner world, that it's whatever's going on in there, that's where the source is in there. It's not on the outside.
But just a little point before we move on to the whole premise of what we're working on today about what takes, does this point of view take care of us, is that, well, in a way, this is actually the same thing. There, if you take physics and you talk about physics from a material point of view, it sounds like you could sit and think about something and attract it to you.
Yeah.
And without doing anything other than thinking about it.
Yeah.
But that is actually coming from the without to the within.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming from a point of view that there is an object out there that has to come to you.
Yeah.
Whether, whatever you call it, house, money, companionship, it has to come to you. And if you raise your vibrations materially enough, it will match the vibration of the thing you're attracting and it will come to you.
Yes.
It's an interesting concept. However, it's flawed.
Why?
Because it comes from a material point of view. It's a measurable action. It says, I'm going to look at the material. It comes from another flaw. It's a dualistic point of view. There is an object out there, has to come to me.
Okay.
So I'm the center of the universe, and I'm going to attract. When actually, adhesion and attraction is a property of divine mind. It attracts what it is. So to work hard at attracting something by raising your energy vibration is still within the material point of view.
Yeah.
Which isn't a popular thing to say because it sounds so much easier. But in actuality, coming from only truth, it is way easier. This is complicated. Sit home and raise my energy level. I don't even know what that means, actually. But I do know what it means to say I'm going to begin to understand that what I look at, everything I look at, is divine mind in action.
Yeah, and plus coming from that point of view, you don't know what else you're going to be attracting to.
Right.
Because there are so many things that come with that.
Yes.
That you don't see.
Yes.
You're focusing on one little thing with the tunnel vision. And with that tunnel vision, other things might come with that or erupt out of that that you don't expect at all. And you can't see that. You can't see what that is. And the other thing about this whole thing is we already are attracting everything into our life, but what we're thinking about by our training and conditioning, everything that goes on, it was attracted one way or another through some of the thought process that we've had, the habitual thought process. So, you know, it's very vital to start really being aware of what we are thinking and what is going
on. What are we thinking?
What are we thinking?
What are we saying?
And who's thinking?
And who's thinking?
If it's that limited human sense point of view thinking, you're going to get more of the same that you've been getting right along from that viewpoint.
So what we've talked about before is that thinking always has to come from the point of view of truth.
Yes.
Because then that thinking is not really what humans call thinking.
Yes.
Then it's letting go of the figuring out and the thinking and coming and seeing as divine mind sees, which we use the word thinking, which is confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better to use the word perceiving. What are we perceiving? What point of view are we perceiving from?
Yes.
Because thinking has all those other connotations involved.
And that's what we're talking about as scientists. You know, they are looking at the world and saying, it's a thought universe. I mean, they're really going to that central idea, that theme of it's a thought universe. And the observer is really what the observer is, what is observed is dependent on the observer.
The dream and the dreamer are one.
Yeah.
The observer and the observer are one.
So if we're observing things through a lens that is very finite and limited and narrow, that's the type of world we're going to be seeing. If we look through a lens that has a lot of fear attached to it, and it's a very fearful, distorted lens, we're going to see a lot of that, a lot of destruction, things like that. And, you know, there are so many things going on in the world that appear that way, because the lens that is there we're looking through is one that we've been looking through for thousands of years. And
yeah,
it's the same old story just keeps happening. And everybody goes, well, when is this ever going to end? Well, it ends when we stop looking through that lens and having that viewpoint.
So it's like putting on pink sunglasses, and I say to you, Del, the world's pink, and you have on blue ones, and you say to me, but Becca, the world's
exactly
blue. We're both wrong.
Same.
We both have
yes
on our own perception.
And you know, in a nutshell, that's our education, that's our training, is you're in the class with the pink, and I'm in the class with the blue, or, you know, whatever. There's all different types of shades, and then everybody goes, oh, no, no, the world looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's still the general, the world looks like this, and we really believe what we see.
Right.
And as Don Juan said to Carlos Castaneda, believing what you see is the dumbest thing you can do. Never believe what you can see with the human eyes.
And even more today, that is even more and more real. One of the reasons I love technology is it keeps pointing the direction to how unreal that is. I mean, everybody knows that when you look at a photograph these days, it's probably not real.
Exactly. You can make it look
you
any
can
way
make it
you
look,
wanna.
And we all can do it. You and I can get in Photoshop
yes
and distort a photograph. So it's a perfect symbol of that what we look at in the world outside is a conglomeration of our point of view, not actually what's going on.
Right.
So who can interpret the universe?
Well, that is the question, and that is the perfect place to start. It's the only place to start, because you have to have the right premise to begin something anytime. You have to start with the correct premise. And only pure mind or pure consciousness can interpret the universe. Whenever a human mind interprets anything, its premise is from a counterfeit male idea that has kept its feminine aspect at bay, and so has a phony interpretation, a very distorted interpretation. Scientists are probably, you know, this is my opinion, but scientists are probably the most closed-minded of any single group in existence, because they think they know something that most don't. You know, it's that idea of, I went into the classroom with the multicolored shaded lenses on. I know something nobody else knows. And it develops that big ego in that area. And then they can't hear what anybody else is saying.
Well, we all can do
and
that
do
in the
that
field that we think we're good
we
in.
We do that, yeah. So
yeah,
I'm not really singling out scientists. It's only because we're
talking about
to scientists.
Physics,
because
right
we all do that. We've been trained to do that.
Yeah.
Let's be very clear. We've been trained and conditioned to do that.
Well,
it is not who we are.
No, it isn't
so
who we are.
So if you take offense to
are
it, please don't, because
yeah
it's not about that. So, now, every place you stand in every situation you are in every moment of the day is experienced through and from the viewpoint of being a human being, again, because that's been our training and conditioning. The training, education, and conditioning of the human is one of separation, limitation, and conflict. Observation from this viewpoint will always look basically the same, because we will always use the same tools to fix what we see outside of ourselves, or to explain it outside of ourselves. We have the same lens, the same
mm-hmm
tools. So it's like has been said, if the only tool you'll have is a hammer, you're just going to look for nails.
Mm-hmm.
And you're only going to see nails, because the only tool you've got is a hammer. So
mm-hmm
pound away. So each science has their own special tool, and since it's unlike what other scientists have, then there is nothing relative really to the problem of that. So that's our premise. That's where we're starting from, that the true premise is standing in that pure consciousness, a pure understanding of what is mind. And it's perfect. And that is something no human can wrap themselves around at all.
Well, and this is where it gets a little confusing, even
very
though it's very simple. Because there is only one mind interpreting itself.
Yes.
So, but the human mind, if we think we're human, So when he say, I'm human, then we can't interpret, we don't understand what we just said. So if there's any understanding or awareness of what we just said, it was within the context of the divine mind understanding itself. So when we get confused and we step outside of it and say, but there's only truth, now we're in the divine mind interpreting itself. When we're in the confusion and the stuck and the bored and the everybody has a different version of what the confusion looks like. We're in that point of view that we're human. And this is the simple part. Then all we have to do is make a true statement. It's the concept of mesmerism. The way out of being hypnotized is to make a true statement. Whatever the true statement is, 2 and 2 is 4, takes you out of the mesmerism of 3 and 2 is 4.
And identify yourself as that true statement.
As the truth.
So it's not so much just giving lip service to some words. It is, that is your identity.
You have to do that felt imagine that we talk about all the time.
Yes.
You can't do, and this is a good time to just, even though this is, we're going into a different thing, the difference between emotion and feeling. Because emotion is a human concept. Always. Emotion.
Yeah.
If you're in the emotion of it, you think you're human. It's like, wow, here, I know I must think I'm human because I'm having emotion. That doesn't mean you don't have feelings, which is much closer to the quality of what divine mind has, feelings of joy and happiness and empathy. Those feelings are what take you into the qualities of what divine mind knows of itself. Emotion, just using those two words, which just helps divide those two things up. See, emotion usually takes you under, is a good way to think about it, or sweeps you away. And feelings give you that innate sense of joy that divine mind is itself.
Yeah.
So that felt imagining, so when you go into, when you make a statement, a true statement, if you can get to the felt imagining, how would that feel if I was?
Right.
Then you're there.
You feel that. Then you are experiencing what it is to be that. And
yeah.
You are that.
And it's not think imagining. I mean, think feeling. It's feeling imagine as if, how would I feel if I was? And if people keep wanting magic, and in a way, that is the magic.
It is. And it's far more potent than magic ever thought of being.
Because magic
but it'll look on the outside. It'll look magical on the outside
to other people.
To others, so they'll be wondering, how did you?
How did that happen?
Yeah,
but you didn't do anything. You just changed the within to the without, rather than the without to the within.
And you know that kind of brings up with when we talk about quotes and we give quotes. Quotes are very useful and really help a lot. But if you get too caught up in just saying quotes instead of really feeling that the principle behind what the words are saying, then you lose the principle, and then you get caught up in just the quote and saying quotes. So it's always a good idea when you're doing quotes or any statement, really understand the principle behind it and be the principle, live that principle and feel it.
As if it was true.
Yes.
Because what you perceive to be reality magnifies. The observer
yes.
is the observed is the observer, the dream is the dreamer.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing is educating ourselves out of false beliefs and perceptions into the true perception. That's really what we're doing. And someday we will no longer do that because there is no perception other than infinite mind. So actually we should be working yourself out of a job.
Yeah. It'll feel more like and look more like, and the experience will be more like, wow, this isn't a job. This is expressing life. This
yes.
is expressing mind.
That's
this
what
is,
I mean. It won't be. It won't be that.
It's pure joy.
Right.
And again, human sense cannot wrap itself around pure joy.
Because well, you're not allowed to have that.
It's been trained
sakes.
Just out of the gate of, well, it's separate, so of course it can never experience what that is.
So basically, if we stick with the human perception, which is what we've been told, and that's our training, but it isn't who we are, so we always have to, the human point of view, the physics point of view, that matter has some, can be, matter is spirituality, which it is not.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look through what appears as matter and see spirituality, but you can't bring spirit down into matter and measure it.
Right.
So it's you have to look through it to see the truth. But if we stay in the human point of view, how does that take care of us?
Well, yeah, exactly. So if you start with the correct premise that mind, pure mind, one mind, always takes care of itself because it can't help but do with that. It's just part of what mind is. It takes care of itself in every way imaginable. Of course it does. So when you distort it and come out of that into a separation and distort what is oneness, that part doesn't know how to take care of itself or others. It doesn't take care of itself because when you listen to individual human minds talk, well, there are certain things that are real good and some things that just aren't, and some things they take care of and some things they don't. It's always a flip side. It's always flipping around all over the place. So you look at that, and so you want to know for sure that human sense does not take care of others. It doesn't take care of itself. It really doesn't take care of anything.
It doesn't know how.
It doesn't know how. It really just doesn't know how.
It doesn't know how to get better, and it doesn't know how to take care of itself.
Yes, and so it tries to educate itself in certain ways to get better and better at things, but it's so distorted and it's so small, and it's really that two-dimensional thing. It's either up or down, in or out. It has no depth to it.
Its job is to survive, so it's always going to be trying to compete with another human sense.
Yeah, and it always is trying to outdo itself and outdo others. I mean, it's just like coming up with the colliders that, you know, these... Well, some of the names of the colliders they come up with for measuring the speed of electrons or protons or whatever they were doing. Some of the names of them are superproton, synchrotron, large electron, positron, large hadron, relativistic, heavy ion collider. I mean, you know, these masculine boy. And then there's one they developed that where they can whip up a particle into such a state of liveliness or freneticness,
yes,
that a single electron can do 47,000 laps around a 4-mile tunnel in 1 second.
Oh my gosh. Well, to me that proves there's only one mind, but I guess that's not what it's proving
it
to
could,
them.
And that's right. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. So we can develop these fantastic things, but then we do these bizarre, idiotic, foolish things, which shows the flip side of that coin, where it can never just, you know, if you can do that amazing stuff that mm-hmm. really looks amazing, mm-hmm. why can't you take care of something as simple as a bird and keep it from dying out and keep your foolishness from killing off something and making it extinct? You know, so we'll talk a little bit just about the dodo, because we want to bring home the idea of human sense doesn't know how to take care of itself
right.
or others. It really doesn't.
Right.
So there has to come a time you have to give it up and go, the only place where something's going to take care of things is within that standpoint of one mind, that pureness of
understanding. So actually, when you are taking care of something, you are in that standpoint
exactly.
of one mind.
When you have the attention and the
right.
awareness of,
yes.
well, of course.
When
why
you're
would
being kind, you are one mind being kind.
Because you're looking at it like the reflection of, why would I destroy myself?
Right.
Isn't that idiotic?
Yes.
And then, you know, there's a lot of things that can kind of come around that human sense will take and pull it in all different directions. Basic understanding is mind takes care of itself. Everything is perfect. If we're seeing something that is, well yeah, but this snake bites or that bug bites, in human context, it sure does. How about standing in the true viewpoint of what is mind? You don't know what it looks like from there.
Right.
It's not going to look like what human sense is.
And you can't figure it out.
And you can't figure it out. When you try to figure out, that's what keeps you locked into human sense. So there was the dodo somewhere in the late 1600s. Now, Newton came up with Principia, the book where he had the laws of the different laws of mechanistic whatever he did, you know, that really started the whole thing of measuring the earth and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the extinction of the dodos happened around the same time. The human being's two-sided nature illustrating the divine and the felonious. That's that flip side. There's that coin. Human sense unpicking the deepest secrets of the heavens while at the same time pounding into extinction for no purpose at all a creature that never did any of us any harm and wasn't even remotely capable of understanding what we were doing to it as we did it. So we're talking about the dodo. The dodo was so easy to kill off. It was reported that if you wished to find all the dodos in the vicinity, you had only to catch one and set it squawking, and all the others would waddle along to see what was up. So by 1755, the only remaining stuffed dodo at the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford was ordered to be tossed onto a bonfire because the director of the museum said it was becoming unpleasantly musky.
Wow.
So even in after we've made it extinct, we don't even have the wherewithal to go, well, let's at least protect the stuffed one. Nah, human says, hey, get rid of it. What do we care? It's that I don't care when it, in certain places. And here's another one, the Carolina parakeet. It was emerald green with golden head. It was the most striking and beautiful bird ever to live in North America. It existed in vast numbers, exceeded only by the passenger pigeon. It was considered a pest by farmers and easily hunted because it flocked tightly and had a peculiar habit of flying up at the sound of gunfire, of course, but then returning almost at once to check on fallen comrades.
Oh.
Now, a fellow named Charles Wilson Peel, who was a bird lover, describes in his book American Ornithology an occasion which he repeatedly empties a shotgun into a tree in which they roost. Here's what he said. At each successive discharge, those showers of them fell, yet the affection of the survivor seemed rather to increase. For after a few circuits around the place, they again alighted near me, looking down on their slaughtered companions with such manifest symptoms of sympathy and concern as entirely disarmed me. But by the second decade of the 20th century, there were only a few alive in captivity. The last one, named Inca, died in the Cincinnati Zoo in 1918. It was stuffed immediately. And where would you go today to see Inca?
I don't know.
Nobody knows. The zoo lost it.
Wow.
So, you know, the only reason we're bringing this up is human sense doesn't take care of itself. It doesn't know how. We look at this land, we talk about Native Americans who were kind of the caretakers of the land. They were exterminated for the most part. And then they took care of the place. The people, the idea, the mindset, you don't blame it on individuals, the mindset that has been trained and just nailed into people doesn't take care of things. It destroys things. It just corrupts. So we're going to a place where the conclusion is going to be mind takes care of itself. And when we stand there, of course we're going to take care of everything.
Well, yes, and that's such a good point to bring up at that place when you talk about that, because when you talk about that injustices, and it seems like, well, small injustice, it's just birds, but since I love birds, it seems like such a huge injustice. And so the human sense of us wants to rush out and take care of that injustice. But we will just, but if we don't come from the right premise when we rush out, then we will just make it worse.
Yeah.
So we have to step back into, did this ever happen? Was it ever possible for a species to be eliminated? Was it ever possible for a man to be so unaware that he could kill in order to look at something?
Exactly.
Is it ever possible? And first come from the awareness that that was not possible.
Well, yeah.
Ever.
And we can go right to the quantum physics. It says, well, you know, there was an electron here, and then boom, it disappeared, and it popped up over here. So only in human sense is a dodo disappeared and gone.
Right.
Exactly.
But we will never see what appears as a dodo again coming from a human sense that man is cruel, that there's duality, that there's an ability to, that it, he could destroy what exists only in infinite mind. Because nothing can destroy what's in an infinite mind. So we may go back to that true sense and then take action, which may look like going out and preserving, building preserves where birds can live. You may take the action.
Yeah, exactly.
But, hopefully you would take some action that came from within, and your specific expression of what that action would be would be related directly to the expression of who you are. Mm-hmm. And not to fix something, but to celebrate
or
what
to
is.
Or to be angry at somebody. Or, you know, it's like, be angry at this Pew fellow or the director of the museum.
Which is where you definitely want to go.
You want to go there, and you know, and yet, it, you know, you need, the requirement is to go to what is mind in that standpoint.
Because if I go there, I'm not taking care of it then either. I'm not going to kindness.
Exactly. Yeah, you're going into the problem. You're trying to solve the problem by being angry or whatever, and that's really just fear-based stuff, which is part of why we ended up in this place to begin with, the fear-based stuff.
So always coming from there's something to fix. If you think there's something to fix, you're standing in the human point of view.
Yeah. When really what's going on is there's life to express. Are you expressing it? There's joy to express. Are you expressing it the way you express it? Which is unique. Which in the idea of mind, in the pureness of that, your expression of joy will be different than any other expression. It'll be so enhanced and so enormous. But when we try to see what that looks like from a human point of view, there is no way you can see it. And so what it appears to look like is, well, if I go to that place where it's all one, don't I lose who I am? Not at all. You enhance who you are.
Well, I think it's very much like the Michelangelo, who said that a statue was just taking away what wasn't. And I think that everybody has an innate sense of joy within that's been covered over with all sorts of weird thinking. And as they let that go, that joy just comes out into like an explosion. You talked about it in the first call about a human, if you look at humans from a material point of view, they have some weird amount of huge amount of energy. They have like 7 atomic bombs or whatever.
30 hydrogen bombs.
I think that the true statement of that is there's that much joy.
Exactly, yes, yes.
And if we would allow that joy to expand,
that
imagine
that. Much joy, that.
That
much love?
Yes.
Infinite amount of love and joy. And you can't ever experience that from a human point of view because we don't know how to liberate that. We are stuck in a little tiny shell.
Yeah.
Now, from one mind, you're liberated from that. Now, the expression is there. Express all that joy and love.
And what's really wonderful is that this information that we're talking about in this form has always been present.
Always.
It's been through all the ages, what we call ages, which there isn't, but through all what looks like human history, that these writings have all taken place and come out in different ways. We can find the truth being pointed to in multitude of ways. And you're so good at finding some of these, but you talk about something called a noggle, and I never knew what that was.
The noggle of Don Juan? Mm-hmm. Well, Native American stuff, yeah. Now, Don Juan in The Active Side of Infinity said, the most accurate statement about what a noggle is, which he voiced, this is Carlos Castaneda talking, which he voiced the day I found him, was that a noggle is empty. And that emptiness doesn't reflect the world, but reflects infinity.
Now, see, this is cool. So in the first call, we talked about the atoms being way far apart. Then in between the atoms is nothingness. And then even when you go into the atoms, there's nothingness everywhere. But if you look at it from the state of my point of view, there's only one mind.
Uh-huh.
That nothingness is the infinity.
Yes, that nothingness is the infinity. Absolutely. And then to go on a little bit more, because to back that statement up, because, you know, some people are like, oh, Don Juan stuff, that stuff didn't really happen. Well, really, we got to look at human sense like none of this is really happening.
Yeah.
I mean, in the viewpoint of pure mind, this isn't going on at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really just clarifying what is
in
true.
In this form.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. So in the Taoist classics of the Chinese, they say, well, you empty the mind and fill the belly. Emptying the mind means to empty the human mind. This is the task of cultivating essence. To fill the belly means to fulfill the mind of Tao. This is a task of cultivating life. So if you want to empty the mind, it is necessary to know the mind. In the mind, there is the human mind and there is the mind of Tao. The human mind should be empty, not full. And the mind of Tao should be full, not empty. If you do not distinguish true and false, right and wrong in the mind, and empty both, not only can you not comprehend life, you cannot even comprehend essence.
Huh? What you perceive to be reality magnifies.
Exactly. And you have to empty what is not true. You have to let it go. You have to eliminate that. And they also have that thing in the Chinese where they talk about the shining mind and the wandering mind. And they refer to the human mind as a wandering mind. The thoughts are always wandering around. and causing distress and stress and
looking for answers.
Looking for answers and looking to fix things and solve problems. And then there's the shining mind, which is the pure mind. And they say eliminate the wandering mind and keep the shining mind. And it's the same, it's exactly what we're saying.
Keep the divine mind, let go of the human.
Yes, and the quantum leap, the shift is standing in that pure place. And then it's not something popping from one place to another. It's being there, and then you'll see all the magic and what Don Juan calls the inconceivable. That's the somersault into the inconceivable, is standing in that viewpoint, that standpoint.
Yes. I love the things that Don Juan says. You talk about, he talked about inner silence as a state of being.
Yeah, he says inner silence as a peculiar state of being in which thoughts were canceled out and one could function from a level other than that of daily awareness. So there's that daily awareness, which is we react to everything we see outside ourselves. We're programmed to operate from that. Where he stressed that inner silence meant the suspension of the internal dialogue, the perennial companion of thoughts, and was therefore a state of profound quietude. And Don Juan said that the old sorcerers called it inner silence because it is a state in which perception does not depend on the senses. What does it work during inner silence is another faculty that man has, the faculty that makes him a magical being, the very faculty that has been curtailed not by man himself, but by some extraneous influence. Don Juan stated categorically that inner silence was accrued, it was accumulated. So inner silence works from the moment you begin to accrue it. And the desired result is what the old sorcerers called stopping the world. The moment when everything around us ceases to be what it's always been. And Don Juan said the end of an era was an accurate description of a process that shamans go through in dismantling the structure of the world they know in order to replace it with another way of understanding the world around them.
Well, now, see, I love that.
I do
replacing
too.
It with the world they know with understanding.
Yes.
Changes everything immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You get the sense of it immediately. It doesn't take time.
Well, remember, Covington talked about, you know, there was addiction that she's one of the head people in the women's addictions from, well, I forget what the name of the place is. But anyway, she was talking about attachments. And people who are addicted are attached to something. They're attached to that instant gratification. And in order for them to let go of that attachment, they have to replace it with something else. They can't just let it go because it'll come back faster and harder than it did before. It has to be replaced. So that's why the thinking process, you quiet down, but what you're doing is replacing all those muddled and wandering thoughts out there with what is that pure essence of thought down in. And there has to be that silence where you can hear what that is. Because mm-hmm. we're used to hearing from the outside, and that comes from deep within.
And replacing things, what looks like things, with the ideas of what they really are, the qualities, the essence.
Yeah.
And feeling what that would mean.
Right.
Is the same thing to me as inner silence. I love that part where you, in the Taoist classics, where it says people of great wisdom reverse the operation of the natural process.
Yeah, they're not bound by that natural process, not molded by the yin and yang, you know, either here or there, the two-dimensional self. They're not compelled by myriad things, not changed by myriad conditions. In fact, they uproot the mundane senses conditioned by history and sweep away all acquired influences. Same thing, eliminate that kind of thinking, that thought, that wandering mind. So they avoid compulsive routine, they transcend all worlds and become incorruptible. So then when we talk about reversal, which the Chinese talk about the reversal of things, which is the same thing as going from that place of you have all these wandering thoughts, all the internal dialogue, to that place of utter silence within, where what you hear now is coming from deep, deep within, from a place not outside of yourself. And reversal means going back to the origin of life. It is like someone who has left home and gone far away, turning around and returning home. Although it is called reverse action, in fact, it is action in accord with principle. It is called reversal because it goes contrary to the course of action of ordinary people.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed when we're doing the shift is that people hold on to the oddest things. So it sounds wonderful. Let's do the shift and let's go to the divine mind, infinite understanding. That sounds really good. Mm-hmm. But that would mean you'd have to give up a way of being that you've done before.
Yeah.
So we tend to hold on to, but that's how I've always done it. That's how I define myself. And it could be really simple things like that's how I fertilized my garden. Don't tell me I got to go to there's only one mind. I mean, that sounds like a silly thing. But if I said that there's only one mind, and that would mean you'd have to like give up the idea of flowers being something that you care for from a human point of view and allow the divine mind to express itself as a flower, and then you'd have action of taking care of a garden. It's a different point of view. But some of us would hold on to it, but I like it the way it was. I don't want to give up that idea. I don't want to give up the suffering attached to how I've lived my life, because if I did, I wouldn't exist. Mm-hmm. Or I wouldn't be who I am. Or one of the false beliefs that we hold on to is like, and there's some essence of truth in it, so that's why we like holding on to it. It's like, what my suffering has made me who I am, so it must be God that has made me suffer. And going back to that, divine mind would make itself suffer, makes no sense whatsoever. But if we look at what we learned from our perceptions that caused us to be in a place that we were suffering from our misperception, then we can learn from that. But God, the divine mind, did not know anything about that suffering. But people don't want to go there because they think, if I go there, that means God doesn't love me. But that's back to that human sense.
Yeah, they're bringing the human sense with them.
Instead of saying, I am the love of God. Actually, we are the evidence that God exists.
Yeah, it's being
that
very
is
clear. Yeah.
The fact that we express love proves love exists. But if we go, but God doesn't know love me personally, is still holding on to that human sense.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that you are the evidence that God exists because you love changes it all to a much broader awareness and a much broader experience of love in your life in whatever form that would take place based on your point of view.
Yeah, and see, that's that discernment that as you become more and more aware and as you become more and more quiet within and start to eliminate the wandering thoughts and those internal dialogues that have been going on incessantly for years, as you do that, you become more aware of what you're stating. And as you become more aware of what you're stating, it gets deeper and deeper and more profound, so that you start to pick out all the little tiny things that still kind of like bring human sense into the picture.
Right.
Instead of eliminating it, because that's what happens for a while, and that's part of what this is it's a little bit at a time. It's here a little, it's there a little. You take small steps, and what you do at first, it seems kind of rough at first. Well, actually, at first, it's quite a shift. It's almost like a quantum leap happens, and then it kind of settles into, wow, now it's like I've got some work to do if I want to really get out of this. And so you do that. But that's when you have the opportunity to really start paying attention to what's being said inside of your own mind. You hear that, and then you can start taking action to eliminate that and let it go and replace it.
Replace those beliefs with truth.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that all of a sudden you jump up and say, well, since I'm infinite mind, I don't ever need to show an action of love again. That's actually the absolute
opposite of the truth. Oh, my God, you'll show so much more love.
So, but as we're making the shift to the awareness of who we actually are and who everyone else actually is, taking care concept that we started the call with, will human sense take care of us, or is it divine mind that takes care of us, may look like things that we physically do. It will look like things like we physically do. We'll eat dinner, we'll take naps, we'll go see our friends, we'll make phone calls, we'll gather together what looks like humanly. It will continue the action. It's just what point of view are we coming from. So if we see everything outside of us, what appears outside of us, as the quality of divine mind, to the rest of the world, it may look like we're living the same life they are. because we're grocery shopping, eating dinner, enjoying food, loving each other. Mm-hmm. We're still doing all of that, but we're coming from a different point of view. The experience is entirely different.
Yeah, it's far more infinite because the experience of that, there is so much of that experience that is inconceivable. Because again, you can sit here and think of impossible things like Alice in Wonderland. You can think of the six impossible things that you could do
before breakfast.
and yet that is very simplistic compared to when you're standing in pure mind, it's inconceivable what you will do and see and be from that place.
But imagining takes us at least out of our thinking. Imagining six possible things for breakfast turns you totally into a different point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gets you out of that old rut of you can't do anything unless you got the proper training. Yeah, exactly. So, again, steps here, there, a little bit, and, you just...
I guess I'm bringing that up a lot because I know that when we move into spirituality, sometimes we become unkind to ourselves. We say things like, or to others, like, if you weren't thinking that way, or if you wouldn't have done that, that wouldn't have happened. And that is actually not infinite mind speaking. That's the human sense pretending to be love. So that conversation would never happen. You never say to a child that fell down, what were you thinking?
Yeah, that's almost like looking at it from the point of view where when you start becoming aware of that's going on, and that's usually the biggest thing is becoming aware that that's actually going on, that's when you want to step away from that particular dialogue that's going on, and you can observe the dialogue. Don't identify with the dialogue.
Don't identify with
what? Either party, the right or the wrong, either party. That's part of what the Chinese were talking about, that right and wrong part of the human mind. You let go of that completely.
Two sides of the coin.
Because that's the coin that is not found in mind.
There is no paradigm in mind.
Right.
There is no sliding back and forth.
Yeah, there's no coin of the heads and tails on it so that you're flipping around. There's no such thing there.
So basically, when we're confused, we're in the human sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're trying to look for an answer within human sense. And the only answer always comes from starting with the right premise. And you see it in so many forms of life in different ways, and falling asleep into a dream and having the answer to a problem. You've actually let go of a human sense within there, and there it is. The problem, the answer was there all along, and you perceive it in the best practical way for you at that time.
Sure.
So letting go of human sense in all the ways. There's that statement to be out of the body in with the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I always think, what does that mean? And what does that mean? And I was running one day and I realized I was thinking, I was having trouble running. So to get through the process of running, I started diverting my attention by saying, oh, look at the qualities of that beautiful flower. And I was thinking about the flower and I was listening to the birds and I was thinking about to divert myself from the fact that I was having trouble running. And then I finished the run and went, whoa, where was I? I was in divine mind. I was with that statement means with the Lord. That's what that means. It doesn't mean zip out and disappear and stop running. It means continue the action, what you're doing, by seeing the qualities of divine love everywhere, or whatever the qualities of mind or principle or action. I stepped out of the human sense,
right.
And the run was fun.
Yes. Well, that brings up the stories of Native Americans who would run. They would run from village to village, and some were known to have run over 100 miles in one stretch without stopping. And other natives will look at them like, well, that's no big deal. But, of course, the Europeans looked at it like, my God, that's impossible. How could you possibly do something like that? And, of course, today we look at that kind of thing like, oh, man, the training you have to go through to get to run 26 miles is like, ooh, But to them it was no big deal. So it really was an idea of, they didn't feel themselves in a human body running.
They
were the action of that. It's a different place altogether. And there's no competing in that place.
Right, who can run the fastest.
You don't need to compete there.
So again, going back to that, just those the Indians running, that's evidence to me that there is divine mind. And every time that we talk about one of these small things, like when I was running, it was wonderful. When all those small things prove the evidence that there's only one infinite mind. You can't have that without that being true. And you can't have that oneness of infinite mind and have a human mind at the same time, which proves the illusion of the human mind.
Exactly.
They can't be in the same place at the same time. So you either have all good or all evil or all matter or all spirit. Not two separate universes, not two places to go, not something to fix. It can only be one. And it's really the choice. Each person has the choice where do they want to live.
Yeah.
Not the home, the consciousness. What consciousness do you want to live in?
Exactly. And, you know, just like you said, it's just like that. It's proving that there is something like that. When you can do that kind of thing, it shows, wow, there is something else going on here. And like the scientists say about the electrons disappearing one place, reappearing in another instantaneously without traveling through inner space to get there. You know, now they say, you know, I've heard them say there's like 11 dimensions. So, you know, can you think in a human sense, well, can I be in more than one place at once? You know, and the human sense will say, well, of course not. Well, you know, again, inconceivable. You go to the inconceivable, which is what is mind. Well,
it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
So are we.
It's everywhere right now at the same time, always. It always has been. So it's inconceivable from a human sense. So that's why do you want to hang on to something so limiting?
I don't know. We do it. I don't know why we do, but we.
I mean, there's a reason the word pinhead is out there. When I'm thinking I'm a human, I'm definitely thinking I'm a pinhead. I'm not believing that, but I'm in pinhead status, really.
Pinhead city.
There's just nothing there. I mean, why would I want to stay there?
Well, and in truth, when you really get then, when you really talk about truth, you aren't there. You have never been there. You aren't there. You aren't even here. I don't even know. You know, there all that's happening, what appears on the outside is a subjective state within each one of our own perceptions. So you can really take that to a huge awareness to let it can actually take you to that freak out place, like, whoa, and it should take you to that freak out place that just totally flips you or somersaults you, as Don Juan said, into the inconceivable.
Right.
Let it take you there so that it actually makes that shift to that one more awareness of infinite mind and all that exists. But the whole idea of the call that we did today was the small R reality or big R reality. And definitely we want the if we look at it from there's only one mind, infinite reality, then what looks like physicists discovering all these things is the result of our awareness of divine mind unfolding what looks like physicists discovering what they're discovering.
Exactly.
So you have to start from the within to the without. All the wonderful things that we see in the world that are like more and more make us one, like computers and internet, is the result of those beginning within and knowing the infinite, that we're all in one place at one time anyway. So it looks like computers and the internet. So they don't make it happen. Mm-hmm. It happens from the inside out.
Right.
So as we do that, then we can celebrate those things with the right point of view. Celebrate the internet. Celebrate physicists. Celebrate all the scientific breakthroughs, because they are the evidence of only one mind, infinite, intelligent, expressing ourselves. So that's why I think it's wonderful. And that the whole concept we talked about in the beginning of the call is that infinite mind loves, it is love. So it is kindness itself. And staying within that, we are always caring for.
Always, completely, in every moment.
Being cared for and caring for. So it may look like an outside action, but it started from within, from the point of view, nothing to fix, and the action is always kindness.
Right. Perfect.
Thank you for listening to this Reality Shift podcast. Del, and I hope it will lead you into deeper and deeper thoughts about the essence of life and find joy in the knowledge that there is so much more to it than what we see with our eyes. You can find the notes to this podcast at theshift.com/podcast, And perhaps while you are there, subscribe to the list so you will know each time a podcast comes out. Or listen on iTunes, Stitcher, and now Google Play. If you have a moment, we would love to hear from you. Till next time, let's just keep shifting the story together.